an abundance of flowering. We want to read two little readings here. The first is from The Voice of the Silence. The light from the one master, the one unfading golden light of spirit, shoots its effulgent beams on the disciple from the very first. Its rays thread through the thick, dark clouds of matter. Now here, now there, these rays illuminate it, that like sun sparks light the earth through the thick foliage of the jungle growth. But, O disciple, unless the flesh is passive, head cool, the soul as firm and pure as flaming diamond, the radiance will not reach the chamber. Its sunlight will not warm the heart, nor will the mystic sounds of the Akashic Heights reach the ear, however eager, at the initial stage. And here's another reading from the Gayatri Mantra. That which giveth sustenance to the universe and to ourselves, from which all doth proceed and unto which all must return, that thou art. In the golden vase of thine earthly body, may the pure light of the spiritual sun shine forth, that thou mayest know the truth and do thy whole duty on thy journey back to the sacred seat. So this symbolizes a journey back, after the long winter, and we had quite a winter this year. So we're on our journey back to spirit, from matter to spirit, which are matter and spirit are co-eternal. Easter is a universal festival. The ancient Babylonians, Egyptians, Norsemen, and Scandinavians worship the egg. Norsemen exchanged colored eggs at the time of the vernal equinox, in commemoration of the goddess Ostara. Hindus believe that the mundane egg in which Brahma gestated broke its shell in spring. Thus, the symbol of the egg is a universal symbol. The word Easter closely resembles names of different pagan goddesses, Ishtar, Ostara, and the Greek Astarte. Goddess Ostara of the Northland was worshipped as a beautiful queen of the springtime. And from Ostara, our word Easter comes. The story goes that when Ostara first came to Earth at the very beginning of the world, she noticed how dark and cold everything seemed. She knew that life in everything was sleeping for a while till it was time to wake again. Then she realized that she was sent on earth to wake things up. Easter celebrates the awakening of life from its winter sleep. The ancients celebrated the 21st of March, the day of the vernal equinox, as the birthday of the world. In the fourth century, Easter was fixed as the first Sunday, following the first full moon of the vernal equinox. During the spring festival, the ancients celebrated the renewal of nature, as the Christians celebrate on Easter Sunday the resurrection of Christ, the rising of the Christ from the dead. After crucifixion, the body of Christ was taken down from the cross, wrapped in a linen sheet, and placed in a tomb dug out of solid rock. And a stone was rolled against the entrance. This was on Friday, now called Good Friday. 3 days later, on Sunday, people saw the door of the tomb had burst open and the body was missing. The story goes that subsequently Jesus appeared before his disciples. The Bible says Jesus rose from the dead. Theosophy teaches that he rose in his finer body, or Mayavi Rupa. Resurrection conveys that everything does not end with the death of the physical body, and that there is no such thing as death for the soul. It always is. To appreciate the inner significance of Easter, we must understand the symbology of the egg, the crucifixion, the resurrection, and the Christ. We are told man has never been without a friend. The elder brothers or adepts helped mankind, and Jesus was an adept. Like Jesus, Krishna and Buddha too died on the cross. The cross represents the tree of life. Tree is a symbol of sacred and secret knowledge. Tree also stands for various initiates. Realizing the unity of all, these adepts and initiates identify themselves with humanity and hence are able to take upon themselves part of the karma of suffering humanity. Taken literally, the whole of the life of Jesus up to his crucifixion shows this great sacrifice which the spiritual beings make in order to help humanity. But Christ is also the divine principle in each one of us. H.P. Blavatsky writes, "Christ, the true esoteric savior, is no man, but the divine principle in every being." And that is from the esoteric character of the Gospels. Christ is not the only Son of God. We're all sons of God in our divine nature. But unfortunately, this divine nature, though all powerful on its own plane, is quite powerless on our plane. Every time we refuse to listen to our divine nature, the Christ within us, we crucify the Christ. So it is not the personality which suffers, but the innocent Christos within us. Every time we want our will to prevail over divine will, there is a minor crucifixion. But every crucifixion must be followed by resurrection. Thus, he who strives to resurrect the spirit crucified in him by his own terrestrial passions and buried deep within the sepulcher of his sinful flesh, he who has the strength to roll back the stone of matter from the door of his own inner sanctuary, he has the risen Christ in him. The Son of Man is no child of the bondwoman flesh, but verily of the free woman spirit. The child of man's own deeds and the fruit of his own spiritual labor. To resurrect the Christ we have crucified, we must allow divine nature to control the terrestrial nature and thus raise ourselves to the spiritual level. Spiritual life has been defined as conscious existence and spirit while we are in this body. Spirit is eternal and we need to become aware of it. Our knowledge of matter has become instinctive, but not so our knowledge of spirit. When that happens, we will resurrect into spiritual life. To accomplish this resurrection, mind must be trained to cooperate with the spirit. We must be bold and frank enough to our own misdeeds, our vices, and our defects. What is spiritual birth? H.P.B. explains that a man striving after spiritual perfection must have three births. First, the physical from his mortal parents. secondly, spiritual through initiation, and thirdly, his final birth into the world of spirit at death. HPB points out the difference between the words Christian and Christian. Thus, Christos means certainly more than merely a good and excellent man, while Christos was never applied to any one living man, but to every initiate at the moment of his second birth and resurrection. He who finds Christos within himself and recognizes the latter as his only way becomes a follower and an apostle of Christ, though he may never have been baptized, nor even met a Christian, or heard of theosophy, or still less call himself one. HPB observes that Christ was Christos as undeniably as he never was entitled to the appellation of Christos during his lifetime and before his last trial. The glossary explains that Christos means a disciple on probation, a candidate for hieronymship, sorry about that, a hierophant. When he had attained to this through initiation, after long trials and suffering, and had been anointed, rubbed with oil, as were the initiates, as the last touch of ritualistic observance, then his name was changed into Christos, the purified in esoteric language. In a way, crucifixion and resurrection reflect the initiation ceremonies practiced by the ancient Egyptians and other early civilizations. These initiations took place in the crypts, caves, temples, and pyramids, where the neophyte underwent a series of physical and psychological trials through which he proved his strength and readiness for spiritual rebirth. The symbol of the cross and the crucified man have deep significance. Thus, the initiated adept who had successfully passed through all the trials was attached, not nailed, but simply tied on the couch in the form of a towel in Egypt and plunged into a deep sleep. He was allowed to remain in this state for 3 days and three nights, during which time his spiritual ego was said to confabulate with the gods, descend into Hades, Amenti, or Patala, his body remaining all the time in the temple crypt or subterranean cave. In Egypt, it was placed in the sarcophagus in the king's chamber of the pyramid of Cheops and carried during the night of the approaching third day to the entrance of a gallery, where at a certain hour the beams of the rising sun struck full on the face of the entranced candidate who awoke to be initiated by Osiris and Thoth, the god of wisdom. The primordial system, the double glyph that underlies the idea of the cross, is not of human invention. For cosmic ideation and the spiritual representation of the divine ego man are at its basis. Later, it expanded into the beautiful idea adopted by and represented in the mysteries, that of the regenerated man, the mortal, who by crucifying the man of flesh and his passions on the Procrustean bed of torture became reborn as an immortal, leaving the body, the animal man behind him, tied on the cross of initiation like an empty chrysalis. The ego soul became as free as a butterfly. In the imagery of the chrysalis and butterfly, chrysalis means cocoon. When a pupa breaks the cocoon built by its own saliva, it comes out as a completely transformed thing, that is, a butterfly. We build our cocoon of flesh, matter, desires, and vices. Each one of us does that. We must break the cocoon and come out as a butterfly, the wings of which denote freedom. Now, the egg symbolizes immortality. The hen lays an egg, and from an egg comes the chick, which grows into another hen. The egg is potentially capable of giving birth to a chick. But in its exterior, such potentiality is not evident. Man, too, is capable of becoming a god, but matter is like the shell of an egg. The chick has to break it. We have to transcend the limitations of matter to be reborn. Interestingly, in Sanskrit, dvija means twice born. And it is also the name given to all oviparous animals and birds. The laying of the egg marks the first birth. And when the chick comes out by breaking open the shell, it marks the second birth. In letters that have helped me, Jasper Neiman mentions the sheaths of the heart, which man has to break one by one. Man himself prevents his coming into direct communication with divine nature. He has to refine and disperse his lower self. Each man has a different mode of doing this, but each who advances at all finds that with every new period of his inner life, a new self arises before him. Looking back over a group of weeks or months, he is amazed to see what manner of man he was then and smiles that pitying smile which we just bestow upon the faded letters of our youth. But there are some that are not strong enough to come out of the rut. They have to struggle hard to break that heavy obstacle which resists all change. In the Puranic allegory, Viswakarma's daughter, Sanjaya, and Sanjaya means spiritual consciousness, who was the wife of Surya, the sun, complained to her father of the too great effulgence of her husband. Viswakarma, the divine carpenter, crucified the sun on his lathe and cut away the eighth part of his rays, creating around him a dark aureole. After that, Surya looked as though he had been crowned with dark thorns, and he became Viduratana, one who was shorn of his effulgence. Viduratara is the type of the initiated neophyte. All these names were given to candidates who are going through trials of initiation. The candidate for initiation personifies the sun, who has to kill all his fiery passions and wear a crown of thorns before he can rise into new life and be reborn. It refers to the process of initiation, wherein the candidate was made to look deep into his consciousness and face the whole of his lower nature without getting disturbed. Candidates were literally made to sit all alone in a dark room. Cutting off the sun's rays, Viswakarma created a similar darkness. This is equivalent to descent into the lower worlds or Hades, where the candidate touches the lowest levels of his consciousness. After facing and purifying it, he rises with the fully purified consciousness. But there are a series of initiations in the life of a disciple till he comes to that stage of final initiation, when he comes face to face with the Dhyani Buddha, the head of the hierarchy to which he belongs. The spiritual birth or resurrection is the spiritual birthright of every human being endowed with soul and spirit, whatever his religion may be. Such individual is a Christ man. And here's a quote from the Padma Sambhava. Although sesame seed is the source of oil and milk the source of butter, not until the seed be pressed and the milk churned do the oil and butter appear. Although sentient beings are of the Buddha essence itself, not until they realize this can they attain nirvana. So, we want to mention some other Easter symbols as well. We've had the cross and the egg and the crucifixion. There's also the lotus. The lotus has its roots in the mud of man's lower terrestrial material nature. The stem grows through the water, man's inner feeling, the immaterial nature, and the flower blooms in the air light, in the air and the sunlight. So the bunny is a mystical symbol of procreation, renewal, and regeneration. See, there are others, but perhaps they'll come up in the discussion. So that's the meaning and symbols of Christmas. I mean, of Easter, excuse me. And we're wondering if you have any thoughts today. In the back here.
Do we have any insights as to why it falls on a different day every year?
Why does it fall on a different day every year? Well, it's a lunar celebration. So that's why. And it's tied to the beginning of spring. Yes, MHW.
Unmute, please.
Thank you. Is there any significance to the idea that it is such a colorful season? And we know that there is a significance to color with the vibrations and all, but it is, we've never heard anything about the significance, but when one thinks about it, it's a very bright and it's a very energetic and colorful time of year.
Yes, well, the coloring of the Easter eggs to all the different colors of the spectrum and brought together is the one, the white light, the source. So color does come into play at this time of year.
There's a chat.
Okay. Is there any relation between Easter and Passover? Yes, can anyone perhaps describe that? Well, there is a connection. Yes, SL.
Well, as we have it related in the New Testament, Jesus came into Jerusalem in the celebration of the Passover. So it was the tradition at that time that people would gather at the temple to bring their sacrifice. So that's what brought him into Jerusalem at that time. And it's interesting, well, that's in the symbolism. The Passover is also a festival related to the lunar cycle at this time. And so it changes too. And it's also in its story of the Passover a reminder of the necessary trials that the individual must go through. And the emphasis on acknowledging the higher part of one's nature and following it in order to get into nirvana, or as symbolized in the Bible, it would be return to the land of Israel. So it's there's a lot of crossover in the meaning and significance there. And
Thank you.
there is a sacrifice involved with that too.
Okay, here's from JCS. Easter is a movable feast. It falls on the first Sunday following the first full moon after the spring equinox. It is a lunar calendar. Yes. Jesse Berg.
It was mentioned earlier that the adepts take on some of the karma of men or mankind. Does that have any relation to Christ, eliminating the sin of man? Is there any symbolism in that, freeing man from sin as part of the Easter holiday?
Well, there's no wiping away of so-called original sin or vicarious atonement being forgiven for all of one's sins, because that's what karma is for, and reincarnation, to work it through, to learn the lessons. We created the sins and we need to undo them as well. As far as the adepts are concerned, they can influence some of the minor currents. They can soften the blow, as it were, of some of the results of sin. So the idea of resurrection of the physical body is actually erroneous. The physical body does not reincarnate, and it's the least of all of our principles. So, much is made of Jesus rising in his physical body, but Theosophy would say that's his mayavi-rupa, or thought body, that actually came back and instructed afterwards. Yes, SL.
Is the symbolism of the resurrection of the Savior, in this case, Christ, specific to Christianity, or is it a symbol that is seen in many traditions that even preceded Christianity?
Yes, that's actually in many traditions before, like Buddha and Krishna, and they all died and were initiated. and they overcame sin and became adepts. So there's many ancient traditions, and in the Eddas, which are the Norse mythology, there was the hanging on the tree for, we think that was 9 days, but overcoming, it's transcending one's nature, one's physical nature, the lower passions and desires, which are so prevalent. And we've intensified them over the years. And so we have crucified the Christ within us, but we need to crucify those lower passions and desires and use them as they would use us. Yes.
Well, when we did study and commemorate the understanding of the meaning of Christmas, it could be associated with an astronomical and astrological cycle. Is there any other similar cyclical event in nature that is occurring at this time that might correlate with the meaning of Easter as a rising or a resuscitation of our spiritual nature?
Well, there's the vernal equinox, and that's the rising of the sap in the trees and the blooming of flowers, and it's everywhere. Resurrection is everywhere around us after a seeming death during the wintertime, except for evergreens, because that's one exception. They do replace their needles during wintertime. They're actually evergreen. But that's an example of our true spiritual nature, we think, that we are evergreen. It's ever ready, it's ever present for us. Yes.
Does the individual human being go through such cycles that the universe goes through on a yearly basis, as far as the seasons, psychologically or spiritually? And if we do, is it dependent on us having some type of spiritual practice?
Okay, so does the universe and go through cycles just as the human does? And does that depend on some sort of practice?
Because the human, us as humans, go through similar things individually.
Do us as humans go through similar things individually? Anyone care to? Yes, in the back.
Well, it depends on how we live life. It depends literally if we choose to follow the laws of nature, and not so much what we practice personally, but what we know about ourselves, what we recognize in ourselves. If we look at nature and take the simple Hermetic axiom of as above, so below. So look at great nature during this period of the year, that which was cold and dead and in potential all through the winter now is awakening, is blooming. There's something new and special during this time of year, all throughout all of nature, vegetables and the animal kingdom. So if that's true, then am I one with nature, or am I a completely separate being that has nothing to do with it? The philosophy of theosophy tells us that all is one. And so if we take the time to learn more about ourselves and are sensitive to certain things in ourselves during this time of year, we may see things that are growing within our own nature that may not have been there last year. There's something new about this year. I'm a little more mature, maybe a little more wiser, but I have a little more self-control. Do I see something in my future today that I looked over that I didn't see before. This is all an individual study. We have to, man, know thyself. We have to know ourselves. So there's no one, so to speak, in theosophy who can tell somebody else, this is what's new in you. But we can point to the teaching and say, you know what? Everything we're taught, we are taught everything that goes on in nature goes on within the human being. And it's for us to find the correspondences and the analogies. And as we do that, as we get to know ourselves better, we can see that more in nature and in other people and work in that way as we develop. But we have to put forth the effort, and it's an individual, self-devised way of doing it. No one has the insights to your soul to tell you what you need to do. That's what we're here for. We're here to find out for ourselves what we need to do.
But free will, right?
It's free will. And is your free will, is the free will of an individual his own will, or does he freely choose to align his will to the divine?
Okay. Yes, thank you. MDW.
Yes. The phenomenon that's happening right now is talked about in theosophy from the winter solstice to the vernal equinox, that the Earth is tilting on its axis and getting more direct rays of the sun. So the days become longer and the Earth becomes warmer and everything blossoms forth. Well, that's an axiom for our inner nature as well. The seeds that we plant in December, there's resolutions that we make, there's observations that we've, as we look back on the year that we just spent, those are the seeds that are planted. And you're looking for, it springs, sort of springs forth at this time of
Right.
year in your inner nature. There's a strength that if you, well, it's this is a time of year when we feel our spirit rising. We feeling more alive, and more connected. So.
Right. Thank you. Yes, the astral light is young and strong at this time of year. It's renewing itself as well. And everything is in the astral, good, bad, and indifferent. It's all there. There's a couple of chats. Wait, let me see. Two new. Let's see. How does theosophy explain the ascension of Jesus into heaven? Well, don't know if it does explain it. Does anybody? I mean, he rose from the dead. Well, that's part of the whole initiation process of raising to the gods and going down into the depths of hell as well, in order to gain all knowledge. An adept has all human knowledge. So, and there's degrees of adeptship, but that's one way. Yes, SL?
So we understand from what's been presented the idea that the adept, through their own individual effort, ascends to heaven. But then, when Jesus is on the cross, there's a thief and a criminal being crucified alongside him in the story, and he says, "You will be with me today in heaven." So, what's the meaning of that? How did it's one thing for an adept, but what does it mean that a thief and a criminal will also be raised up to heaven? What did they do to earn it in that sense?
We don't know. Go ahead.
I was thinking maybe since there's three of them, the other two could have been a metaphor. And if you look at it historically, maybe, I don't have an answer, but looking at it metaphorically, the body and the soul being raised with the spirit.
The body, soul, and spirit being raised, that the threesome is a metaphor. Okay, in the back.
Well, if Christ was talking to them, was he probably speaking to them soul to soul or person to person? Probably soul to soul. And as we all know, there's a certain bliss in the after death stages of life that we call heaven. He doesn't say that you'll be perfected and you never have to come back and pick up where you left off. Bible doesn't get into that. But all of us, when we die, typically have a certain heavenly experience until we're prepared again to be reborn and pick up where we left off. All the wiser, hopefully, to fly in the wisdom.
NHW? Is this on this topic or another one? Go ahead.
We always wondered if he was, when he said that the two of them were going to be with him in heaven, we were wondering if there was a metaphor there for the lower self, the two of them representing the lower self, and that they were going to be risen to the higher nature.
There's also another chat explaining the Passover a little better. The Passover was understood. Wait, hold on a second. Let me. Okay. I'm reading a chat now. And I'll get right to you. Just wanted to add that the Passover connection, the movable feast, was once calculated the same as Passover and was understood to mark Passover, the name for Easter in most languages is derived from Passover. But after the Council of Nicaea, they began to calculate Easter so that it always falls on a Sunday. Yeah, it was for the first 300 years or so, it was a movable feast. Go ahead.
But to get back on the other thing, I forgot.
Yes.
Maybe they were meant to be like thieves or murderers in this lifetime in order to learn specific lessons to re kind of restart their soul, or what is it called? Energetically, like make the soul learn. So when they're ready to get reincarnated once again, they will not be those things because the soul had to learn what it's like to live in an avatar and to be a thief or to be a murderer or to be a godlike person on earth. You're learning nonstop. So maybe it's to reset their soul after they've passed away. That's why they're able to rise up and go meet up with Jesus or whoever, or
Okay.
before they get reincarnated.
Thank you. So we must pass through all experiences, every single one, during our many, many lives. Yes, Stephen Levy.
Yes, I was thinking a good deal of what of the life of Jesus in the four gospel. It seems to me was a representation of the guardian wall in his life in terms of his actions amongst men, etc., and especially on the cross in regards to those who were there with him. And it seems to me that that perhaps the greatest negative in the dogmatization of the story through the Council of Nicaea, etc., was making this such an individual and lone situation for one man called Jesus, and separating it from the idea of great ones who have always been with us, and to heed the teaching as opposed to paying too much attention to one as the only one.
Right. So the universal symbol was degraded and made a unique experience for one individual. We go through all, we must, yes, SL? There's a hand up.
Well, this is a contributions in line with the connection between Passover and Easter, but also the symbolism of the three on the cross. It was brought to my attention that in Passover, very often the greeting is given that, which relates to the meaning of the Passover, may you pass over or break free from anything that's holding you back and rise into spirit or the freedom of spirit. And we think that's the same message of Easter in a different language. And it also re represents the metaphor of the criminal and the thief. They have to break free from what's holding them back. And they too have the potentiality to rise with to the Christos state. So the possibility of resurrection or ascension is not limited to any one human being, but is the potential of every human being in whatever state they're in.
Yes. And so we see in nature, things are starting to sprout now, and the seeds have been in the winter time. They've been in the soil. And so the cycle goes from seed to sprout to shoot to branch. Then there's the leaf, the flower, and the fruit. And within the fruit is the seed. So it completes the cycle. So we see nature all around us working. There's also the central point, the great spiritual sun of the cosmos. Easter is the central point of Christianity. So the sun rises. It's that inner light. It's that spirit, which through incarnating again and again and again, we're brought back and given another chance. So karma is just and merciful. Yes.
Well, the question of Buddha. So studying Buddhism, they got some of them where they're doing I think it's called annihilation of self, where they're trying to get out of the karma of being reborn. They don't want to be reborn. They talk about the bodhisattvas, and the bodhisattvas, they attain some form of nirvana, but they choose to come back to lead other souls to nirvana. So I was wondering, what's the theosophical perspective? Are we trying to get out the realm of reincarnation, or we want to keep coming back and doing this again?
It's a choice. It's a choice that we're given. There's two paths. There's the path of liberation and the path of renunciation, also known as the path of woe. So, yes, there's a lot of Buddhistic practices that want to gain nirvana to live on from eternity, but actually, even those eternities have limits. They're not absolute. So, that individual would come back at some point in time. Far, far distant. But those elder brothers have chosen to renounce nirvana again and again to come back and help suffering humanity. And it's a burden. And it's, in a sense, it's the cross that they bear willingly for us. So we get a choice at a certain point. Go ahead in the back.
Yeah, is an evacuation theology. That's what you're probably saying.
Okay.
One time,
Evacuate. Okay.
the following principles of theosophy, as taught in the writings of eight people of ASCII and William Pugh Judge, The principles are to renounce everything that comes to me. It's not about me. It's about me serving the universe. Ultimately, as was said by the questioner, that bodhisattva, or in another language, you also hear the word nirmanakaya, has chosen not to enter nirvana so that they can stay back and be of greater service to all of manifestation to assist in the evolution of all. And when all is ready for nirvana, then
I don't want to dominate the conversation.
Okay, well, this is not, this is, yeah, this is like raise your hand and be recognized. Go ahead, go ahead.
So I was thinking, I'm pretty sure this is in theosophy. I'm not that studied on it, but I know it's like a heart doctrine and an eye doctrine.
Yes.
Does this correspond to that in any way?
Yes. Well, the eye doctrine is the doctrine of the law and the letter of the law. And the heart doctrine is merciful and kind and compassionate and giving and not concerned with other people's sins, just to renounce our own. Yes. There's another chat here we see. Why do women wear Easter bonnets on Easter Sunday? Because they like to dress up. That's our answer. SL.
Well, the male and female have always been symbolic throughout time of the creative and procreative faculties in nature, throughout all of nature. And nature is always, for this reason, in its procreative aspect, has always been symbolized in a feminine way. We think of Mother Nature, for example. And this is a time when Mother Nature begins to wear its bonnet. And we see the blossoming of flowers. And we think it's maybe an intuitive or a acknowledgement that this is a time for showing forth the beauty in nature, to wearing it and demonstrating it. And we think even men in their own way, in some cases, get dressed up very specially at this time. Yeah.
Right.
Nice.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, we have a couple of minutes left. Yes, MDW.
Well, we must add that there's no historical record of a Jesus ever walking the earth. But there are records of other beings about that time that did walk among men, that had these powers and these things. So like Apollonius of Tyana, and there's a rabbi, Josephus, and there are many. So this is all symbolic then. This is a myth that lives, but it's not exclusive. It's a universal myth.
Right.
And we need to just keep that in mind, and that you know, that blossoming forth, that coming forth of those spiritual ideas that one planted in the wintertime, in December, are blossoming now. And we need to and recognize that in our nature, that coming forward.
Yes. So just about that time. And we just want to remind everyone before we close that this week, this month of April, we have the Sacred Texts of Humanity Part 2. And next Sunday is the Dhammapada, which is about the life of the Buddha. And so we hope you can join us, and we hope you found these ideas useful. And Make it a great Easter, everyone. Good night. Goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.